And welcome back to Geniuses, Poets and Artists. We are here on our 11th episode, and here we have a very special guest. Our guest today is Pammy from Layers Music Circle. Yes.
Hi, Tim.
And I think we've already known each other for somewhere close to 5 or 7 years, somewhere in between there at this point. So our opening for Geniuses, Poets and Artists is always, who are you?
My name is Pammy Tan, which is like the most common surname in Singapore. But yeah, that's why my parents gave me a slightly less common first name. Mm-hmm. Thank you, mom and dad. I work in my day job. I write and produce local programs, and that covers anything from like comedy to variety, reality, infotainment. Anything that's not really like dramatic, although I did a short stint with the drama department, which was quite eye-opening, but more or less we do anything that isn't drama. And on weekends now, I try to make my son less bored by taking him out, although there's no real, I mean, right now we can't really take him out to anywhere in particular, but before like the heightened measures and stuff, we brought him to like places like Gardens by the Bay and the zoo. He's more a plant person.
He likes plants.
Yeah, he was like very excited by Gardens by the Bay and the waterfall at Gardens by the Bay. But like when we went to the zoo, he was more interested in the plants around the enclosures. And yeah, then the animals themselves.
Okay.
And the fans. I guess because it's like spinning.
Okay, so that's your son. So what I'm hearing so far is that there are two. I mean, you mentioned work first, and then now you mentioned your family. Is there anything else that you say like defines you?
I really like singing. I love singing. Before I discovered musical improv, I already enjoyed the concept of just bursting into song. Yeah. Once I went to Switzerland with my then boyfriend, now husband, and we had to walk 40 minutes back from we had to walk 40 minutes back from, I think, a vineyard that was closed because they had some like private event because we missed the train. And I was bored, so I said, you know what, let me sing about the lake, because we were walking past, I think it was Lake Geneva, I can't be certain, but it was like one of the pretty lakes, and I said, let me sing about the lake. And then it started out okay, like he was entertained for the first minute, and then he wanted me to shut up so badly. But then I went on to sing about the ducks on the lake and the reflection in the water. And I'm surprised that he still married me. So, hey.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, you guys have a son now. So that seems to have worked out okay.
Yeah.
What was the last thing you sang about?
Recently? Or
In a show? Not necessarily in a show. Just, you know, as time passes. Or any, you know, in general.
In general, I didn't really sing about it, but my husband woke up and he dreamt about a condor, and so
did you say gondor?
Condor, like the bird.
Oh, okay, yes.
So he sang a tune, and then I kind of sang along.
Huh, okay, cool. This is fascinating, because at least for me and Hazel, neither of us has a musical bone in our body. This is very different from our lived experience. cool. So a condor, very fun.
Yes.
Excellent. So that's who you are. Awesome. So what, I guess my next question usually goes, we start to explore a little bit about the improv side of things. So that's how I got to know you. I remember this quite distinctly. I think we went to do, it was a story slam thing, right? Where they would ask people to tell stories and monologue about themselves a little bit. Then maybe you're doing a disservice to the idea of a story slam, but sure, that's how I remember it. And I think the improv company, we went in to do a set or something, or we went to observe. And then you were there, I guess with Amos. I think you guys were attending it as part of it. I think you were, because you were seated right beside the stage, so it was very obvious that you were there, but you weren't involved.
Story Slam was started by a junior of mine from junior college, Elena, and she was really passionate about it. So I think when she was getting it off the ground, she would ask a bunch of us from school to come and support, and I would be more than happy to go down because I enjoyed the whole artistic environment. We used to do theater together in school, so it was something that I kind of wanted to be a part of after starting work again. And then I saw you guys doing improv, and I was like, so good, I want to do it too. How? Yeah, I mean, that was the voice in my head. I didn't actually say it out loud.
Okay, cool, awesome. And then I guess the one thing led to another. So that was how you first encountered improv, or had you any experience with it prior?
Previously it was just Who's Line, which we would watch online. Mm-hmm. I watched a couple of shows when I was in San Diego for exchange during my university days, but that was it. I didn't think that there was a scene. In Singapore, so when I came back from my exchange, I didn't think to look for people who like-minded individuals. Yeah, so I was like, oh, cool. It's an American thing. Honestly, at that point, I didn't even know that other countries did it too.
Right.
That was in 2009. Yeah, and I was cool. It's a US thing.
Right, and I guess it largely is in many ways. And I think improv tends to spread in quite similar ways. People see it in the US or in Europe or, and where there's an active and large scene, and they're like, oh, that's fun, and they go back. And some people eventually go oh, let me try to do it here. Which is, I guess, what happened here. And then, when you do more of it, more people see it, and they're like, oh, let's try it out. Which is, I guess, where you came in.
Yeah, honestly, when I discovered TIC, I was so excited. I was bursting with excitement, and I went around telling people, do you know about this? And I mean, people tell, after I got to know you and a few other improv people better, people started telling me, oh, there's this impression that improv is not cool. And I was like, why? It's the coolest thing I've seen.
Clearly one of the early converted. Well done. when you first were looking at that, were you thinking musical improv already, or was it later on?
I think my first thought was okay, I want to be able to do what they can do. And then as I got more experience, the idea of musical improv, I think someone brought it up, and I was like, yes, that is what I want, and that's what I want to do. More of,
okay. Because in my mind, this at least for Les Musicables, right, it came together in a certain way. I think Ying Ling was the one who brought it up and said, hey, let's try this out, and we were like, okay. And then that version of the group had a certain kind of journey to it, and also Joel came in at some point. And he had spent some time in New Zealand, right? And he was I've done this musical thing. And I'm like, yeah, music, great. I said, I have zero musical bones. And so I was like, I don't know what you do, but let's try it out. And, one thing led to another. And I think, the way Les Musicables could have happened in the way it has without all of these other things happening beforehand. And so it's just kind of a fun little journey to kind of map out to see how did this come about? And you guys did a show yesterday, right? So it's the first one in something 18 months or something crazy like that?
Yeah. Where are we now? We're at the end of... Oh, we're June. This is June.
Yes.
15 months. I think the last show that we did was March 20... Oh, no, maybe more. I think January 2020?
Right, yeah, which will be almost 18 months. It's 17, yeah. Well, almost 1.5 years, which is kind of... That has never happened before, right? Even when things, when the team's tired or the team's taking a break, it's only a few months time, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, that's I think the longest we've gone maybe 4 prior to the pandemic. And most of the time, even if we're not doing a show, we are working on skills. We're working on learning dance, trying to improve our vocal quality,
right.
Trying to learn different music styles. singing style. So I think when the pandemic hit, it was kind of like, okay, now like singing is not allowed. I know it's very dystopian, right? Like
a little bit, yeah. Just kind of like no laughter. At one point, I was concerned that, you know, the shows would be like, okay, audiences are not allowed to laugh, because when you laugh, you know, all the spittles flying out. Yeah. You know, I shouldn't say this too loud. Maybe someone at NAC will hear and be like, oh yeah. But you know, I'm kidding. I think.
I mean, they're wearing masks. I guess it's okay as long as you laugh into your mask. Like, don't take off your mask.
Right. And then after a while, they were like, oh, you can't do audience interaction at all. And some of this, we have so many ways of interacting with the audience where, and it's just a blanket ban because, you know, you just don't want that to happen. You don't want any kind of transmission to happen, which is understandable, but also it can feel so, yeah, dystopian, very heavy-handed sometimes.
Yeah.
Then you guys were banned from singing, right? Because, or at least there were a lot of restrictions. When I think yesterday at the live stream, there was a thing where you had to be 2 meters apart when singing, which feels kind of
apart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And only 2 people can sing at any one time. I mean, I think before the heightened measures kicked in, it was 5, which would have been a lot easier. We would still have to like be 2 meters apart, but then we could do like group numbers and like there'll be more. There may be more room for like a different like variety of songs.
Right.
But I think the hardest part about being 2 meters apart is when you do a duet, and you know it's meant to be like a love song,
right,
and
yes.
Everyone you're like looking at your scene partner, and you really really want to go out there and grab his hand, and you're like fighting every like instinct, your improviser instinct that's telling you to do that because it's not legal. Oh yeah,
yep.
So yeah, that was the most unnatural. Even though I knew it wasn't necessary, that was the most unnatural part for me because it's like
Yeah, because at least in watching that stream, which I believe if you're listening to this podcast in probably maybe 2 to 3 weeks time, it will still be on our channel. So if you want to go and check it out, you can see the moments when they were having this kind of emotional connection, but where they were just basically not allowed to do that, to physically get close to each other. They would have to sing at each other from 2 meters away, which you know, even in that moment, it looks so like, we know what they want, but we can't see that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I know all these measures are for, like, to keep us safe. But hopefully, we can just hope that, you know, things will get better, I guess.
Yeah.
And that I think, like, if the idea is to, like, eventually, you know, have the economy get back to where it is, then the arts is, like, a big part of the economy. I mean, you can go about your day doing, like, your, like, day job and be okay and be happy, but you're probably only content. I mean that I would say that applies for me. But when I'm like making up songs and like coming up with a tune that may or may not make sense, I don't know. I feel light. If that makes sense, I feel. Both like lights, like the luminescent thing, and light as in like heavy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great way of describing kind of the experience when you're out there and you got that flow going and you're in your element, and you're really feeling it, right?
Yeah. Thanks, dude, for setting all this up, man. I mean, I got home yesterday and that was the first thing I thought of. I was like, yeah, felt. Like both meetings of the
world. Oh, well, you know, I enjoyed myself tremendously. So, I mean, for those who are listening, I was behind the cameras, literally, because, you know, it was a live stream thing. I don't know how the cameras work, to be honest. Not really a tech guy, but I was there to try and help things going. And I was watching that, and I had not having seen Lemuse perform for like 15 months and seeing them back out there. I mean, for me, it's also a bit of a symbol, like that, you know, things are maybe even as things come ebb and flow, right? The restrictions, we have hope that at some point we will get back to where we want to be, rather than where this whole like pandemic thing is forcing us to be. And you know, thanks guys for pulling it together. I mean, even though you guys were so game for it, because we asked you guys and there wasn't any way you guys could rehearse properly, but you still came and pulled together and made it happen. So thanks so much for agreeing to that. And we definitely hope that we can see you guys back out there again and in a proper way soon, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, man. I have ideas. I'm like excited.
Okay. Well, we can talk about that later. That should be fun. Really looking forward to that. Great. So all of that, you know, so that was how improv started. I guess how we've been dealing with some of the pandemic related things. I would say, generally speaking, Pammy, what's your favorite improv thing?
It sounds like a leading question that is almost sexual that I'm afraid to answer.
It doesn't have to be. When I say thing, it could be, I'm leaving it very open on purpose, right? It could be a team, it could be a show, a concept, maybe a show you've seen, a specific person, maybe a show you've done, maybe a mantra. It could be literally anything. Just, you know, come in an improv thing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think one of the most memorable shows that I've done was for I need to count the years. Is it 2017 Manila Improv Festival? It was the first time ASAP, which is the other team that I'm on, performed at the festival as a team, and we've been workshopping at that point the soap opera genre, which we really enjoy and we love. And it was the first, I think I've done a lot of shows that I say I'm proud of or, you know, I enjoyed, but it was the first time I performed and I felt transcendent. I know it's weird. Okay, I promise it's like I'm not like into I'm not like super into like woo kind of like, I mean a little bit, but like also I'm not that flighty. When I say transcendent, I mean I really like everything, like improv is supposed to be, you know, when the word is it's improvised, right? So it was the first time I felt that everything came together so seamlessly that for a moment I forgot I was doing an improv show. That's why. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great way of describing it, right? So I think that in for many of the improvisers I've been speaking to, that's kind of the high. That kind of high point that they've done before and which they sticks in their mind, right? Because that is such is a feeling that is so hard to replicate anywhere else with anything else. That flow state, right? I think there was a psychologist that talked about that, Mihaly something. I should probably look up his name. I mentioned him a few times, but I can never pronounce his surname. But it's a basic flow state, right? Where it comes at a state where it intersects perfectly with the level of competence, the skill level, as well as like you know exactly what you need to do in any given moment. So this can apply to sports, it can apply to art, it can apply to, well, improv, clearly, because it happens so often for people. And I think that's a perfect way of describing it, that transcendent state of forgetting that, you know, the context of it and just you are in that moment so completely.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I really love about improv, that like it forces me to be present, because I think I have a problem with that sometimes. Like I get distracted very easily, but that's just me. And improv forces me to be present. Like I don't know if you remember this, but when I first started out doing improv, and like my hands couldn't even be still. Like I would like twirl my hair, and like you mentioned this to me. I don't know if you remember, but you mentioned it to me. It's like, do you notice that you twirl your hair when you're not doing anything? And I, I mean, I kind of knew, but like I also didn't know. And like the more I did improv, the more I was forced to, like, at least like when I was trying to take my skills to like a higher level, the more I'm forced to be present in the moment. And I'm happy to say I'm not sure if it's because I haven't had long hair in a long time, but I haven't twirled my hair in a long time. Yeah. And since I started doing improv.
No, I mean generally when I see improvisers that I'm familiar with, I mean there are certain kind of habits and whatnot. Fidgeting is not one of your issues, right? By any means. So yeah, you've gotten past that, which is great. Awesome. That's growth, right? We can never become a perfect improviser. We're always trying to figure out the next step. But it's always like, what's our next new step? What can we solve now? What can we progress to next to figure out what's the next step in becoming a better player?
Yeah, so what would you say is my next step to become a better player? If you had to, like, yeah.
I literally have not seen you for 1.5 years. And so that yesterday was the first time in so long. And I was just happy to see you guys back out there, to be perfectly honest. Like, to the point where the gear was kind of malfunctioning a little bit, and I was like, how can we like make it better? Because I think yesterday the mics weren't working, but you guys were fine, right? Because you guys are projecting all the time. And so it wasn't really an issue. The cameras could pick you up perfectly well. But the next group, the accidentals, they're a little bit greener, and they're not so used to projecting, so it was a bit of a problem. So at that moment, I was quite distracted, but I was like, they're doing, you know, Lemuels is back out there again. They're doing their thing. It feels really familiar. Cool. This is a very familiar feeling of watching them play out there. I was just really happy that was happening.
Yay.
Yeah. So, you know, that's maybe the next time, right? Hopefully that'll be soon. And then if we can have that conversation again about what I'm thinking at the moment of like, oh, how can this be better? Although, okay. I guess on a related note, I went for a therapy weekend, just before lockdown, restarted or whatever it's called. And, you know, there was a moment of where my therapist was like, why do you keep looking for like sad, bad things? Which is true. I do. And I'm trying to move away a little bit from that, just to have a good balance between celebrating what's awesome and also thinking, okay, what's the next step? So, because like, you know, my usual practice before, I would say in the last 8 years, right, has always been after I do a show, I'm like, oh, how did I suck? How did the show suck? How can it be better? But that's a bit of a downer move. And sometimes there are just things worth celebrating first. And then after that, you can think about it later on.
True. I don't know if this has to do with our upbringing, though. Like, I think when I was a kid, and I mean, I love my parents. They're great. But like, sometimes, I mean, I'll come back and celebrate, like getting good grades or something like that. And like, I mean, I know my mom says a lot of stuff, and like she means for them to be encouraging, but she was like, okay, we can't rest on our laurels.
Oh yeah,
we always
yeah.
have to think about how we can be better and, you know, do better next time. And I don't know, I guess that makes me also default to like, oh, okay, that was a, like, sometimes I feel like, okay, that was an okay show, mm-hmm. That was a good show, but like, what could be better? And I all like, even sometimes when people say, oh, no, like it's cool, I enjoyed it as a whole, I'm like, but what could be better?
Mm-hmm.
yeah and I don't know, as in like, it's, I guess on one hand it's good to like, you know, tell your kids not to rest on their laurels, but then on the other hand, you're right, maybe we just need to be like, yay for like little wins, especially, you know, when there's a pandemic going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, right? I mean, you guys are grappling with a lot, like new live streaming, the tech not working, me like bustling around going like, why is this not working? at the moment. So I would say it's a win. I would say it's a net win for sure. And then the rest of it is just like, you know, it'll be small incremental gains that we can make. But yeah, it's definitely an upbringing thing as well. But at the end of the day, right, whenever an improviser gets out there, I am like, my first thought is going to be, they got out there. And that's amazing, right? Because not everyone does that. There are many people who make their choice to not get out there, or to not make themselves seen or heard. And that's fine. That's their choice. And you don't have to, I'm not belittling anyone or saying that that's a worse choice. But whenever someone makes that active choice to be seen and heard and be counted, that's worth celebrating.
Yeah, I think we don't celebrate that enough. I will make a mental note to do that more, like with other people as well.
Okay, awesome. Yay. So at this point, I think it's, in some ways it's quite clear, but I would like to ask you, how would you describe your relationship to improv?
I mean, improv is my soul food, man.
Oh.
Like, it's I as in not like like it brings me comfort and it enriches my soul. So like not like not okay, don't not like li- well yeah, literally it feeds my soul. So not like soul food in that it's also comforting. No, so it makes sense both ways. Yeah. It makes sense both ways. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it comforts me, but it also like feeds my soul. I mean
right,
it
nourishes.
Yeah, I mean writing local content is safe. I would say it's safe. Like we work within, you know, OB markers, and you know, and I'm very honest to like anyone who asks, like, yeah, we know where our limits are, and you know, we don't go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we do try to push the envelope at times, but we know that there's only a certain extent we can go. And that's, and you, if you really want to be in the industry, there is, I'm not saying that there's no innovation. There is, like, there is a lot of innovation. There's a lot of growth, but there are also some places that, like, there are some things that you can never talk about, and you have to be okay with that. Like, there are some, like, so I have friends who are like, I would call them the hardcore creatives or like auteurs. I would tell them, like, you know, it's, yeah, go do your films. Don't do local TV unless you really need the money and you can, you feel like you can put aside your personal principles and be like, okay, yeah. But a lot of them can't. And I would say, like, if they're really hardcore about not being able to like handle the gray of like not being able to 100% produce a show that is like absolutely in line with your personal life principles,
mm-hmm.
then you might be better off doing something else. But I would say that there is growth and it's happening. Change is happening, but it's slow. But I am hopeful for the future.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. So that's kind of like your take on like as a local kind of media scene.
Yeah. So that's why I do improv, so that like I can. I mean, not all the time, but like I can drop a few F bombs here and there and feel good about it.
Okay. Okay. A bit of leeway there with the theater side, and also I think IMDA doesn't necessarily. Entirely grok how it works in the moment. Hopefully that
will...
Yeah, that's an entire different conversation that's kind of bubbling. So hopefully that will get resolved soon. Maybe even by the time people are listening to this, that will have happened. Cool. So that's improv. And it seems that you have this really... honestly, it seems like a really honest and kind of mutually like beneficial relationship that you have with improv. So aside from improv, what else is going on with you? Like, what else are you most interested in?
Wow, I think it's been a while since someone asked me that question. I love the anime. Like, I know, I've always been I used to be a casual kind of anime consumer. I think up to maybe a couple, up to last year when we went to our first lockdown. And at that point, I was in my third trimester, and my husband suggested, why not we start watching Naruto? Like, I mean, it's a lockdown, and, you know, we don't just want to be doing work 24/7, even though, like, that's what a lot of us did. But, yeah, so then I was like, okay, I think I can't remember how many episodes, I think like 600. A ton of episodes. I think it's about there. Like, there's a ton of episodes. So we started watching Naruto, and it goes like way back to when like it was still the 4:3 aspect ratio. Like, it hadn't gone to 16:9. So the animation was obviously like not fantastic, and the storytelling was slow. But he was like, we just gotta like power through the first I don't know how many episodes. Mm. I mean, it was great that we were on lockdown, because I don't think I might not have continued if we weren't. But mm-hmm. since, you know, I was like, okay, fine, we're at home. I just like binge it. Yes. So then I got really invested in the story, and mm-hmm. we were watching it all the way till we were even watching it when I was in the delivery seat.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. He brought his laptop in, we set it up, and we started watching. And then after I gave birth, we continued watching throughout the long nights, breastfeeding and like tending to the baby. In between he's crying. Yeah, we watch. And after that, I was like, I want more. Yeah, I mean, before that, I like here and there, if it's a good series, I would consume it. But I think it was really like Naruto that sparked off like my interest in like consuming more. And after that, then I went on to like the titles that are big today, like Demon Slayer. I thought, I think the art is beautiful. It's like the fight scenes are gorgeous. And so it's like when they say like, you know, water style or like whatever, like you know, fire style, like that, like it's supposed to be a style of sword fighting that isn't literally, well, I mean, there are some people say that, you know, they don't literally, the water doesn't literally like come out from their swords. Like it's supposed to be a metaphor, like it's the way the sword moves and stuff like that. But it's just gorgeous. I mean, and I look at it and I'm just like, so pretty.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one thing to have come out of a pandemic.
Yeah.
I went and looked it up. Naruto has something like 600, 700 episodes at this point.
Yes. They even have a spin-off series called Boruto about like his son, but everyone hates on it because it's just one of those things that, because in a typical shonen anime, your protagonist is like the underdog. So when you have him as the son of the former protagonist, you kind of have him already with like an advantage. He isn't really the underdog. So it's like hard for a lot of people to root for him, I think. Yeah, and I think a lot of his struggles are like, you know, or with like his father's legacy, which it's different. It's a different way of approaching the genre, but I think a lot of people found it hard to root for him as like a protagonist because they found him whiny. Like they were saying like, oh, you know, your father was an orphan and you're like complaining that he's not back for your birthday. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, right. I wouldn't say that it's not a valid complaint, like, you know, absent, like parents who are like more, you know, busy with work and, you know, absent for like your milestones. But yeah, it's hard to, I guess it's harder for a lot of people who grew up with Naruto to root for his son now that his son has like everything that Naruto can have, which is like a loving family, you know.
Right.
Because he's the son of like the Hokage, which is like the head of the village, like he is popular. So, you know, I guess they wanted to have they chose his son as the protagonist because it made sense that, you know, he's continuing the legacy. But I also think it might have been better if they picked someone else and had the son as a character and maybe even be an antagonist. Who knows? It might have worked out better. But hey, I am not the manga creator, so I will leave it to them to continue the story.
Okay. Well, it's clear that you've really gotten into it. I mean, you're saying all these things that someone who really is like, yeah, I care, you know, kind of gets it, would be able to say. So that's fun. Yeah, so I guess this is fun. Is there anything else that's been like particularly like, you know, consuming your time and energy?
I mean, my son, I guess, like I've been, I don't know, like that, like I definitely been thinking, wanting to like spend more time with him and wanting more time for myself. Like I feel, and I may be wrong, but I feel like my husband doesn't have this dilemma. Like if he has to go out and do something, he'll just say, I'm not free on this day. But unless, like, you know, for some reason, like, you know, I really need him to be home, he'll still stay home. But like, for me, whenever like I have like someone like ask me to do something even before checking the schedule, like with like Amos, like my husband, do like deep conflict and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. My first thought will be, should I be spending that free time with my son instead, like to teach him something or to, you know, to help him grow in a certain way? Or like, yeah, apparently according to a lot of my friends, it's just it's a thing called mom guilt. Yeah, like mom guilt.
Mom guilt. Like, right.
Yeah, you feel like you're never doing enough. And I don't know, like everyone says, no, you are, you're doing the best you can. But then I always ask myself, am I doing the best I can?
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know, I mean, like he's a sweet kid. Like he comes up, like, you know, when I'm done with work at the end of the day, he comes up to me and, like, you know, he will pull on my pants. Sometimes he pants me accidentally. Like he almost did it in public. Oh. It was like, yeah. But like there I think because it was, you know, there are not a lot of people around, so like it's okay. Like I managed to pull it up before anyone saw me. But yeah, and you know, he like I don't know if he understands the concept of what a mother is, but like he knows I'm like one of his people. Right. Like one of his people, right. Yeah. So he can be affectionate with me, like, you know, and he'll like nuzzle his like face on my neck and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know if I should be doing more or or if I, and sometimes when I take time out for myself, like I feel happy, but then I don't know if I should be feeling happy.
Okay. It seems like a parent thing. I think we had a brief conversation a few months ago. I think I was starting the podcast about, because I guess now that I've known you for what it seems like, 6 or 7 years at this point, and everyone, you know, that we met at that time who was still improvising is also 6 or 7 years older. Some people have become parents. I mean, you guys have become parents, clearly. I'm sure someone else has. At this point, I've kind of lost track a little bit, but it's also kind of like, it's likely that that will happen. We also have people coming in who are parents, who either were already parents when they started doing improv and whatnot. So I was starting to, and you know, a parenthood might be in my future at some point, Jesus Christ. So I was wondering if, you know, improv has had any effect on the way you parent.
Okay. So I hate telling him no. It goes against like everything that I feel like I want to encourage him to do and try more and be adventurous and like not be afraid to fail. Mm-hmm. And that's a philosophy that, like, you know, I truly think is fantastic for raising kids. Like, you know, just encourage them to do things, try things, and not be afraid to fail. But he's also just about turning one. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things that are dangerous or, you know, that might be scary and not scary in a way that like he might physically hurt himself, you know. And I have to tell him, no, you can't go in there. No, you know, that the ground is the ground has like bugs, you might get bitten. And he's too young to understand. He just does, like, and I don't know. I find it hard to, I every time I have to tell him no, like a little bit of me like dies. I'm like, I don't want to tell him no. But this notion that it's for his own good is something that I also don't want to make a habit for myself. Like, how many times have our parents said that don't be this or don't study this or don't pursue this because, you know, it's not going to make money. It's for your own good. And I feel like now I get it, but I also am trying to tempt myself. Like, for example, if he crawls into the bathroom and I know it's like, you know, it's wet, it's slippery, he might fall. But at the same time, I want him to be able to explore, to know like, oh, what's the difference between like, you know, wet and like dry surfaces, how it feels different, like, you know, when you step on it or when your hand touches it. So the only way I can do that is if I'm physically next to him while he explores. And that can be quite exhausting.
Right, right.
But I am more comfortable with that than having, than like physically removing him from the bathroom, which I think a lot of people do. I mean, my mother-in-law does that because she says it's for its own safety, which I agree.
Right.
But I like my instinct is to, you know, explore, try, and I will, you know, I've got your back. I've got your back. I'm there. If you fall, I will catch you. But it can be quite exhausting to do it all the time. And I sometimes, like, I tell him, like, you know, I hope he can, like, you know, walk faster. But then again, like, then I was like, no, wait, then if he can walk, then he can access more dangerous places.
Yeah, I guess the problems change, right? As for a kid, like, when they're starting out versus, like, a year, second year, third year. And then they hit primary school, and then there's a new set of problems, and then they become teenagers, and then it's not yet another thing. And plus, you're all getting older at the same time. So it doesn't really stop. It just changes.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, I'm replying a word text. Okay, I'm done. Yes.
Oops. Yeah, well, from home.
It was a list of, like, there were like two or three messages, and I was like I'm just going to reply and say that I'm on a call with a friend and I'll get back to you in a bit. Because I'm afraid like more texts will come in, or like they'll, because it appears that I'm online because I have like WhatsApp open on my computer.
Right.
Yeah, but like I'm not replying, then it feels like, yeah, I might
be. It feels like a very work from home kind of issue.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to be the parent that supports him and like lets him, you know, try everything and do everything and like take risks. But I also am worried that like he might hurt himself, and like I guess these problems only get like bigger as he gets older, and I don't think he'll ever go away, like ever. And I guess it's just having to constantly remind myself and temper that, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, try and find that balance between, you know, keeping him safe but letting him like really explore and flourish on his own terms.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Wow. Well, being a parent sounds like super hard work, and not just like in terms of the energy, but also just emotionally trying to balance that, while also keeping true to your own values that you want to bring to this this whole parenthood thing.
Yeah, for sure. I think another thing that I've also been thinking about is like, you know, like some people swear by routine and schedules, and like it works for their family, it works for their dynamic. But I like to see where he goes. And like sometimes my mom, like, you know, if you're not feeling this, then it's okay, child, you don't have to do it, like it's all right. But my mom's take is that it might breed ill discipline in the long run. And I don't know. I mean, he's just turning one. So I'm okay to like roll the dice on that for now. If I'm wrong, then I'll admit I'm wrong. But for now, I'm okay. At least when I'm with him, you know, if you don't want to do something, or if you don't want to eat something particular, I'm not going to make you finish it. If you're tired and like if you're not tired and you don't want a nap and you're, you know, you're not grouchy, okay to let you stay up an hour extra. But like, there are some people who will be like, how can this be? And I mean, and it's, yeah. And like, yeah, but I think one thing is when you become a parent, you realize that there are so many different schools of thought when it comes to like raising kids, and there's no one right way, but everybody is very defensive of their way, because the implication is that if your way is the wrong way, you are screwing up this human being for life. I mean, that's the fear, I guess, or like you may be screwing him up for some time. And I don't know if a lot of people think about this, but it feels like a burden you must bear. And I'm slowly coming to terms with it and like not letting it totally consume me. Like at the end of the day, when he grows up, he will be his own person and make his own decisions. And maybe in part, like letting him stay up an extra hour, couple of nights when he's a baby or a kid may not be that big a deal. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Awesome. Looking forward to that. And I guess you're learning. I mean, it's almost a year, so that must have been quite a big transition for you guys as well.
Yeah, I always tell people, like, if you want to have a kid, I think be in an emotionally good place. I mean, even then, like, people who are, you know, in a good place can still get postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety. And it's hard because, like, I know people who have had it, and sometimes when you're in it, you don't know you have it. And then, and then what seems like, you know, like, I think recently there was an article about a lady who, you know, she tried, and I don't think it's any fault of her husband, but she tried telling her husband that she really wants to quit her job. She doesn't want to go back to work. And it's you know, I guess to anyone, it might seem like a normal, like, oh, you know, it's, yeah, you know, you just gave birth, it might be tiring for you, it'll pass. But, like, I guess it, to anyone who's listening, if you really, you have someone, a friend who's expecting, or, like, you know, someone who's had, like, you know, just had a kid, you know, reach out. Sometimes, like, I think a lot of, like, just random texts from people who knew that I just had a kid, who said, like, hey, how are you doing? Or, like, are you all right? You know, like, they kept me tethered. Yeah. And I even if I wasn't feeling particularly good that day, it reminded me that I had people who cared, and like, people who were checking with me. So the first 3 months especially, I think, like, I look back and, like, was just like, it's kind of a fog, but I'm glad that I had people, you know, who would always just, like, randomly drop a text and just, you know, be like, how have you been doing? Like, you know, okay. I mean, sometimes I don't reply to, like, a day later because I'm just so exhausted, but I appreciate that, you know, they send that text, and sometimes all you need is just one text to, like, be like, okay, I'm good.
Okay. Yeah. And I would just also broaden that generally. We are all in the middle of this pandemic, right? And I think if you're going through a pregnancy, that's especially stressful. But if you feel like there's a friend you haven't talked to for a while, and you might want to just say, hey, hi, how are you guys doing? Sometimes it's that text can make a massive difference. So, you know, even if they don't reply, it's no cost to you, really. So reach out, say hello, make that connection. We're all human together. Thank you, Pammy, for spending this last hour with me. I really appreciate that. Really, really fascinating conversation. Do you have any idea when your next either Lemuse or ASAP show might be?
So ASAP is looking to do a live stream, I think, on the 18th of June. That's a Friday evening. We haven't quite ironed out the details yet, but do check us out on Facebook at ASAP Improv. We'll probably put up the details maybe in a week or two. And for Les Mews, I'm really keeping my fingers crossed that we can do an in-person show. And, like, even with restrictions of, say, like, if we can even just, like, five singers, I think we can put on a great, like, comeback show. Like, I'm not like trying to be, like, you know, boastful. I genuinely believe that, you know, we can.
No, I believe that too. I'm looking forward to that. We don't know when that might be, but we will make that happen the moment we can. So thanks, Pammy. This has been the Geniuses, Poets and Artists. Thank you guys for listening in. No competition this week, but if you like, have any feedback, as usual, you can reach out to us at contact@improv.sg. I'm Kim. I've been your host for the last hour and last 11 episodes or so. Of course, if you'd like to try out some improv, check us out on improv.sg. And if you think that your company could use a dose of the power and joy of improv, also reach out to us. We would love to bring that to you as well. If you've heard how Pammy's improv journey has been, maybe that can be yours too. Otherwise, stay safe. Thank you so much. And as usual, speak truth to power.
Yay!